you know, I was thinking about when I first heard her, when I did buy that record, Clouds, and why it was so special. And as I look back, you know, there really was no one like her. And I just think there's parallels to Dylan, really, because, you know, there was a musical form that she took one step further, much like he did, a folk music type of form. And she had this incredible voice, a very unique way of playing guitar. And she was, you know, an incredible writer from the get-go. So it's just one of those, I think I remember reading a quote by James Taylor where he said she just sprang from the wild somewhere. You know, it just, all the stars came together, sort of like with Dylan or the Beatles or something. I mean, that's how strongly I feel about her. The only other artist of that time and a female especially that I think is in the same ballpark as Laura Nyro. But Laura, you know, she was a piano person and very urbane and almost, you know, more R&B and very, very important to me. But Joni is that really, that's what I could do. That's what I aspired to do, you know.
Well, and some people have commented, like, she's 20 years old when she writes Both Sides Now, and that whole Clouds album, actually probably younger than that when she's writing that.
Yep.
And how much wisdom is in these songs at that point. Is that an attraction to you even then?
Yeah, absolutely. But a lot of my favorite writers at that time were very young, and it seemed like there was an inordinate amount of wisdom coming from them. Dylan, Jackson Browne, James, Joni, you know, Paul, Simon. To me, it happens, you know. There can be great insight at a very young age, especially from a sort of ultra-sensitive artistic, you know, temperament. What I like about Amelia, or what's notable to me about Amelia, is experiencing that song after following her through all those records until Hejira, and to know her work and then hear Amelia. And I don't know, to me there's you know, some artists hit their stride very, very early on and then it's hard to match it, but some continue to become better editors. They mature more. They say more with less. They're more evocative. And that, to me, is part of what I feel about Amelia. I mean, I can take it alone as a song and talk about why it means so much to me. But part of the picture to me is watching this artist progress and come up with a song like that, which is just this amazing circular form that I've always loved, ending with the same phrase, you know, after each verse. And, you know, it's just as good as a song can get. The images, where it goes, it's not linear. There's all kinds of images. There's clearly a story in there. And then you have this reoccurring character that she's speaking to, and we all know who it is, and this metaphorical thread, you know, of flying and crashing and dreams, and it's stunning, you know. Yeah.
You and I talked about something that I was always impressed about in your music, which was the ability to kind of deal with duality and ambiguity and the both sides of things. And, you know, I really have seen that for a long time in Joni's music, and I'm wondering if that's something. My question was going to be, what is Joni Mitchell especially good at doing lyrically? You know, and I know you can't say everything, but I know that there are some things that she's kind of extraordinarily good at, I think. And I'm wondering if you might be able to talk about those as a writer, how she might have informed your work or what's impressive about the writing.
Yeah, there's several things lyrically, I think, that come to mind when I try to zero in on what affected me. Initially, there was great imagery. I remember being really affected not only by the sentiment and the fact that she was not afraid to be quite personal, but that there was just painterly imagery, you know. You know, eventually it became, this is what I think is so great, is how the themes can become more complicated with the writer, because life somehow gets more complicated. And your work, hopefully, is maturing. And I think sometimes writers get simpler, and there's probably examples of her doing that. And I think, for me, Springsteen's a good example of becoming this great short story writer, you know, and uses less and less words. You know, he was really verbose at the beginning, which was incredible. He was great. And it's just been really interesting to watch what happens with his songwriting. But yeah, Joni's like a searcher, you know? She also tells great stories, and also, to me, has a great talent for combining very eloquent stuff with great colloquialisms, you know, with street talk, with street jargon. And when you hear her speak, she does that too. It's really compelling. She's just great with language. I mean, she's absurdly great with language. But the duality thing, that's why I think Hajira was, it's probably my favorite record, because there's, you take Amelia, the song itself, Hajira, is just, to me, it's circles, you know, it's circles of, it's like chasing your tail, you know, the whole record is, in a way, it's like, Hajira means, you know, flight, I believe, or, you know, the whole record's about running away, and ultimately, you know, no matter where you go, there you are. And, you know, it's just so beautifully done, huh?
Here's a line from that. I'm so glad to be out on my own, but still sometimes the touch, slightest touch of a stranger can send a trembling in my bones. You know, it's like within, you know, three lines.
Well, that whole song is full of it. There's, you know, here's the hope and hopelessness I've witnessed 30 years. You know, I look at the granite markers, you know, and here I am chicken scratching for my own immortality. You know, it's just like, God. And I think she was, 30 years old. See, that's what's sick.
I wanted to ask you, a lot of people, rightfully so, love to talk about her 70s work. And then in the 80s, here's an example from Wild Things Run Fast, where you were just talking about how less words still work. She's got Solid Love, you know, which she produces with Larry Klein. We Got a Break, unbelievable. We Got a Break, right in the middle of this Hollywood heartache. You know, even looking at the verse here, it's really short, sort of staccato, very, very different from Hajira. But when you hear her sing it, it's got this exuberance, and it's just perfect for the mood that she's trying to create.
Yeah, and there was a very joyful tone to that record. I remember, you know, I remember that record coming out, and it was like, Joni's happy in love, you know?
Yeah, well, is there something else about the way you've kind of tracked her through the 80s and 90s, you know, that feels important about her work that's not discussed very much still? I mean, is it a continuance, or is there something new happening with Joni in the 80s and 90s that is interesting to you as a musician and a fan?
Well, for me, I love Wild Things Run Fast, and Joni can write a simple sort of rock and roll song as well as anyone, you know? I mean, really, that's she can tackle anything and do it well. But, you know, I'm sort of predisposed to the complicated, more dark stuff. And so the songs that that I think of when I think of her material in the 80s and 90s is like Turbulent Indigo and Job's Sad Story. And, you know, it's the pain stuff that I go for. You know, and the stories like Cherokee Louise. So there's Magdalena Laundrie's. Yeah, there's great, there's, you know, she's in great form. It's just those are the things that have always kind of caught my attention.
What songs of hers did you cover early on that you were drawn to?
Oh God, I covered everything. I did Marcy, Cactus Tree, tons of stuff from Clouds, you know, Both Sides Now, I Don't Know Where I Stand, and Ladies of the Camp, I mean, Conversation, Willie, I did, you know, I learned everything I could. And then For the Roses was a big deal because finally a Guitar Tab book came out that showed you the tunings, which was like, you know, it was like discovering God. So
the keys to the treasure chest.
Huh? It is, yes. It was like a treasure chest. And so I learned the tuning to, oh God, I think it was Bar and Grill, and realized, oh, that's the same tuning as Sisotobo Lane, which is on the first record. And yeah, it was like finding the way through a maze, you know, you've been trying to master. And so there were all these windows opening to other songs of hers previous to For the Roses, which was really cool. And I learned everything I could and played everything. I'm trying to think of when I finally had to kind of stop. And I think what came after For the Roses, Blue.
Yeah. Well, no, Blue was
before. Blue was before it, yeah. And then there was For the Roses.
And Court and Spark.
And Court and Spark.
Court and Spark was when she came out with the band, basically. And
yeah, I did. I learned stuff off Court and Spark, but I think by then I was having to. Besides, she was doing it with the band, and it was harder to emulate. I'm trying to remember the year Court and Spark came out. I mean, at some point.
Yeah, 1974.
74? Jesus.
You were 18.
Yeah. At some point, I had to consciously stop it, you know? I had to stop doing it.
Yeah, but then there's something about that experience that, you know, continued to inform your playing. I mean, there's sort of a percussive style of playing that, you know, I can remember seeing films of Joni doing early on in her solo work that, you know, that I see you still do.
Oh, she's the biggest influence I've got.
Yeah.
Without question.
Right. Well, my time's probably up. Is there anything else that, as you were thinking about this and...
No. I mean, the thing that I think that the point that I was kind of keen on making was just how unique she is, you know? Just how special a development in, you know, music it was to, you know, to have Joni Mitchell become part of the landscape.
Let me try asking it this way to kind of wrap up. What did she give everybody permission to do?
Well, I hate to make this about gender, but it really is. I mean, I'll hold her up to any guy and say, there's no distinction. She's just as good or better than, you know, I mean, it's not, ultimately for me, it's not a distinction of male and female, but as a girl, me, who was learning guitar and aspired to write songs and be a great artist, you know, that was my aspiration. And she had the triple threat, you know, the total triple threat, unique, unbelievable singing. I mean, that singing still, I mean, what, you listen to the live record, give me a break. I mean, it's supreme. And the guitar playing and the songwriting, I mean, she's a genius. And that, to me, was the first woman that came along in this singer-songwriter, you know, genre that became something, starting really with Dylan, I guess. She was the first woman that just had it all. So that she gave us permission to write very, very personally, however we chose to do it, just to be unique.
Yeah. And then add to that the fearlessness of facing, you know, her artistic whims without fear of how they'd be received, or, you know, that comes later, but it was really probably a very powerful thing for artists like you.
It was very powerful. It had not been done, you know. It just hadn't been done like that. You know, we were all interpreters, in my opinion. You know, except for Laura, and I'm sure I'm leaving out someone. But to me, it was all, you know, that was my choice, to be a good interpreter, and maybe sometime writer. But she changed it.